Hello, CQW listener. This is Scott Price. This week on CQW, we are featuring a series on crime, safety, and development in downtown Winnipeg. This is the third interview in the series. The third interview is with Owen Taves. He is a graduate student at City University of New York. He studies human geography. He's originally from Winnipeg. Here is Owen Taves.
So I guess where we'll begin with kind of more of a broader question is how is policing policy and development policy linked?
Right. Okay. So I'm not. I don't really know. Like, so I haven't done research about the Winnipeg Police Service policing policy these days. But I do know that they're they sit on this group, this sort of alliance of actors in the downtown called the Downtown Council. The Downtown Business Improvement Zone, Center Venture, Forks North Portage Partnership, the University of Winnipeg, and the Winnipeg Police Service and other sort of institutions have people on this board. And so I know that they, through this council, they coordinate certain things, although I don't exactly know what they're coordinating. That's something I hope to find out more about in my research. But it does seem, right, like definitely the way that downtown is developed and the way that it seems to be policed is based on a sort of hierarchy of what kinds of people are seen to be sort of accelerating the progress of the area and whose presence is valuable in that space, right? And this often seems to fall along the lines of more sort of white, affluent, more often suburban people who have money to spend in expensive bars and malls and things like this. And then lower income, often indigenous peoples, right, who live in sort of adjacent lower rent residential neighborhoods who are often harassed and arrested and detained by the Winnipeg Police Service and the Downtown Biz Patrol. So that's sort of how I guess I would see those two things connecting, right? Is so that the way that downtown is being restructured in terms of development policy is to sort of eradicate these lower end spaces, these spaces of poor Native people, and to replace them with higher end spaces that are definitely going to be whiter, more affluent spaces, right? And so I think that we can draw connections between redevelopment and policing in that sense.
Right. Now, to talking about the racial aspect is something, and development we'll get to in a moment, but also in an article in G's magazine, you were very critical of the Biz Patrol and what they do. So could you kind of explain a bit of that?
Sure. I mean, so in that article, basically, I sort of cite this sort of long, it's now a pretty long history, actually, in North American cities of putting together business improvement districts and having those districts create their own sort of pseudo-police forces to clean up the streets, as it were, right? So business improvement districts are essentially alliances between business owners in a particular geographic area, usually in a central business district. They pool their resources. The creation of this district enacts a tax on every business owner, and then they use this money to fund things like patrols, right? And the idea of these patrols is to basically allow central city commercial districts to compete with suburban shopping malls. Right, so they lost a lot of business historically in the mid to late 20th century to suburban shopping malls. So the impetus behind business improvement districts is to win back more affluent shoppers and consumers through cleaning up urban space. So they plant flowers, they pick up litter, and they also police human beings, right? Which is problematic in a lot of ways because essentially it's a form of policing clearly based on class conflict, right? So you have capitalists in a specific geographic region essentially attempting to manage and displace and detain poor people who don't have enough money to, you know, shop at their stores and eat at the restaurant. So that's, I think, I'm not sure if I'm explaining, if I'm drawing those lines clearly enough, but it's policing based on this sort of class prejudice, I guess, is the simplest way to put it. And that's problematic for all sorts of reasons, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, a couple weeks ago on another show on CKUW called Mud and Water, a local guy here, Robert Galston, who's also blogs a lot and talks a lot about urban issues, how he summed it up, it was very interesting. He said, basically, they want to replace one class of drunks with another class of drunks. So I guess that's kind of basically what you're saying too, right?
Definitely. So if you look at this new strategy, which revolves around this tax increment finance district, which this sort of downtown council is calling the sports, hospitality, and entertainment district, the whole idea is essentially that the progress of the city is based around attracting sort of pricey bars, nightclubs, banquet halls, and of course the centerpiece of the entire project is the MTS Center, right? The idea is that the future of the city is in these sort of expensive drinking spaces, which is super interesting because then in order to protect the investment in the sports, hospitality, and entertainment district, what is happening is basically sort of systematic buying out, closing down, and displacing of cheaper drinking spaces that are inhabited primarily by poor Native people, right? So it's definitely a class project. At the same time, I think it's important in the Winnipeg context and the Western Canadian context overall to really point out that these so-called class projects or projects that are easily considered like cast as class-based are also really clearly based in anti-Native racism and the history of colonialism in the region.
Mm. So it's just sort of a continuation of the displacement that has happened, right, through the last 100-some-odd years, right?
I mean, I think it's interesting to think about it in those terms, yeah. So I think it's interesting to think about, you know, so a lot of people will talk about the contradictions of capitalism and the contradictions of neoliberal capitalism, right? So with like the downtown biz and the Chamber of Commerce and the downtown council all arguing sort of for lower property taxes, lower business taxes, et cetera, making it basically impossible for governments to house the poor, right? To handle in a human way the intense poverty produced by capitalism, right? And by lay capitalism, especially with deindustrialization in cities like Winnipeg. But on the other hand, I think you're right that we can talk about these sort of contradictions of settler colonialism in a place, you know, like Manitoba or like Western Canada, right, where you have a group of people that are systematically denied basically access to all the opportunities and life chances that white settlers were historically provided with. And then there are attempts to eliminate this group essentially as a specific group through residential schools and things like this, which didn't work. It's never going to work, even though, you know, it's attempted over and over again. So we have this group of, I shouldn't say we have this group, but there is a group of disenfranchised people created through settler colonialism that sort of white elites and people who are in charge of sort of managing the future of Winnipeg and Western Canada are interested always in managing and moving around and displacing because they have no real solution for addressing those problems.
Yeah,
sorry, no, I feel like I'm going off on these tangents.
No, that's fine. the other thing, though, I mean, you're talking about contradictions and things like that. And one thing I note, and then you pointed it out in that article that you had in G's magazine, and I thought it was a good point because then I started really thinking about this, is that, you know, lately there's been all this discussion, like there was recently there was a report on crime in downtown, And it was really interesting because this debate has been going on for a while. Like, I think it was about a year ago that Air Canada pulled out its office from downtown.
Right.
And basically citing they said panhandlers, aggressive panhandling, crime, that kind of stuff is why they don't want their people around there anymore. And then, so it was interesting because Mayor Sam Cates, Stefano Grande came out and lambasted them for doing this. Whereas, though, interestingly enough, they said, well, downtown's safe, all this stuff. But yet, during election time, they were clamoring for more police officers. Sam Cates basically talked about getting tough on crime. We need to get on a crime problem. Yet, you know, any other time, though, outside of an election, it's, well, downtown's safe. We have to, you know, invest and you have to go downtown and all this kind of stuff. So there's also that interesting contradiction in it wherein there's this notion of tough on crime, we need, you know, kick the bums out, which, you know, I mean, at the same time too, if you look at the crime statistics downtown, there is a lot of crime downtown for a lot of different reasons, certainly if you just look at the straight statistics about it. But then, you know, then at the same time though, they want it still to be attractive for investment, so there's this weird shifting between being development friendly but then also still maintaining this tough on crime persona. I mean, I think more like at the local level, that's an interesting contradiction.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think you really actually explained that really well. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what more I can add really, but I think that's pretty clear that there's this face that you know, city leaders put up to try to attract investment and say that downtown is safe and progressing, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's the sort of face that they turn to suburban voters, essentially, right, to say that, look, this is your city and this is unacceptable, all these threats that are, you know, being made to your enjoyment of the city, and we're taking care of it and we're going to be tough on it, and sort of playing to those fears and that those kinds of you know, class and race-based views. Yeah, I think that's a super interesting contradiction, though. And I think that's something that, you know, probably those people could be called on to some extent.
What well, they were in a lot of ways, and they have been, which was good to see. But, I mean, one other thing, though, in talking about more about the policing policies, it's interesting, though, if you look again, like I talked about, I mean, if you look at the statistics, there are, you know, mugging, sexual assault, attempted mugging, attempted sexual assaults downtown. And if you look at it, there is quite a bit in that range in downtown. And certainly that's not, I don't think, anything necessarily to scoff at. I think it's pretty complicated, but at the same time, it's there. But then, interestingly enough, though, as you pointed out in that article, and as you said, like, there has been so much money given into something like the Downtown Biz Patrol, and now we have the Winnipeg, the police cadets. But they're basically there to patrol, make people feel safe, and then enforce bylaws, which essentially means the intoxicated, moving intoxicated people out of the downtown. So it's also interesting to see that the response is also something that doesn't seem to make any sense, because people say there's all this crime, yet we have these cadets in the Biz Patrol that aren't there really to deal with the crime problem at all.
Right. And I think it's important, too, to think about who exactly is most targeted by violence in Winnipeg, right? Like, Winnipeg is just coming out of, this really sort of, these sort of tragic circumstances of three Native women, Tanya Nipinak, Carolyn Sinclair, and Lorna Blacksmith being killed, you know, placed in garbage bins, and in one case, in Tanya Nipinak's case, ending up, you know, buried in the Brady Road landfill, right? And this is part of, you know, a process that Native women in Winnipeg and across Canada have been trying to draw attention to, right, of the over 600 missing and murdered Aboriginal women in Canada. And I feel like, you know, like, this is, like, actually horrific and a sort of serious, exceptional case of violence, right, that is so often, like, ignored or elided by these, like, dominant constructions of downtown as unsafe, right? So I feel like, and if you look at the amount of money invested in like shifting intoxicated people to the, like, outside the downtown, and the amount of money that's invested in, like, has been invested historically in Winnipeg for things like Operation Clean Sweep, right? Which came after, you know, the single death, like, this, the death, the horrible death of, this sort of, young white surgeon's son who is sort of cast by the local media as being innocent, right? And if you contrast, like, those massive forms of investment with like, the tiny investment that, the governments make actually in the safety of Native women, right? The tiny investment that the Winnipeg Police Service made in, you know, trying to rescue Tanya Nebeck's body from the Brady Road landfill, right? Calling off the search after 5 days, against the wishes of her family and allies. I think that's another really interesting contradiction and something that, you know, we should all be criticizing.
Yeah. Just kind of at the end here, look, I mean, we were very critical of things like the shed zone and what it does and primarily what it's there to do. So what kind of development then would you want to see in downtown? What would you advocate for?
Right. Well, it's also interesting too how, like, there's this whole kind of, like, messy discourse about the decline of Winnipeg, right? What the decline of our cities kind of means, I guess, like, and how that gets and so I feel like there's, like, you know, all different kinds of things get lumped into this discourse of decline, right? So, like, closed storefronts, suburbanization of investment, out-migration of different kinds of, like, commercial investment, and then at the same time, like, deepening poverty, joblessness, etc. But then the solution tends always to be, you know, these days, especially in the neoliberal context, is, you know, providing grants, loans, financing, land, etc., to developers to build, you know, arenas, condos, malls, and what have you. And then that whole sort of other aspect of so-called urban decline, like intensifying poverty and joblessness and, like, an affordable housing crisis, it's sort of ignored, right? So I think that, like, this sort of crisis, this affordable housing crisis and the rates of homelessness and hidden homelessness in Winnipeg are out of control and have been out of control, you know, for a long time. And sort of these dominant visions and processes of revitalization never seem to fully address that crisis. It might sound simplistic, but we need an affordable housing strategy, and we need to build as much affordable housing as we can, I think, in Winnipeg. I say we, I don't know who I mean by we, because, you know, the current leadership of the city certainly isn't interested in doing that.
Yeah, and I suppose neither is the federal government in doing that kind of a plan either.
Right.
But we'll have to leave it there, Owen, but thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much, Scott.